It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo! Woo-hoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Welcome back to Talking Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm Jess Sterling. Today, we are wrapping up season two of Shit's Creek. And of course, as always, I'm joined by someone who has not been able to watch the season three premiere in over a week and still can't watch it until we're done recording this podcast. Stuart, how are you?
Can we wrap this up already? I am desperate. We recorded last week's episode early, so this has felt like even longer than usual. And now I have to wait even longer. Yeah. This is unbearable. I've been used to watching them week on week. Why do I have to wait 2 weeks this time?
Because this is the way we plan this out. Yeah. We only have ourselves to blame, really.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, here we are. Season two is in the can.
It's done. We finished it.
Getting through them.
We're flying. We are two seasons in. We're not quite halfway through because this is a six season show. So we have to get halfway through the next season? No, fully through the next.
No, fully through. Mm-hmm.
2 seconds in the
We're
podcast.
Starting off so well. I love this so much.
I'm always confused because I know half of six is three. Okay, I promise. I know.
There is a drag race gif waiting for you.
Anyway, yeah. So here we are. We're gonna round up season two. We're gonna talk all through it in juicy detail. If you are new here. I don't know why you'd be starting with this podcast. That's a little strange. But hi, welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us. You can find us at Talkin' Shit on all social media. The way this works is we talk through kind of each of the Rose's character stories, you know, the story arcs through the season. Then we rank the characters. We talk through who our MVPs and LVPs are. We also reveal the winner of Simply the Best and Disgruntled Pelican. And we're going to talk through Stuart's predictions that he made on last season's wrap-up podcast, see if any of those came true. He's going to make some new predictions. We'll go through anything we missed, any feedback, and then that's it. Then we'll wrap things up, and we'll be off to the races for season three. Stuart, what did you think of season two? How overall, did you find it to be a step up from season one, a step down? What were your thoughts?
Hated it. The show sucks. No, I loved it. It was so, so good. Everyone that had guested on season one had been saying that things get better in season two. Not that season one was bad by any stretch of things, but season two is where things start to kind of build up momentum. And by season three, everyone was saying on this season is where things just sail. They it takes off and just goes. And I certainly felt that. This felt like a huge step up from season one. I felt like it was a lot tighter. I felt like it knew itself a little better. We'd also gotten over the exposition almost of setting up their situation and kind of reveling in that, oh, look, they're rich and now they're poor. Ha, ha, ha. That's still there, but it's not the thing that is front and center. What's becoming front and center now are the people. And the people are just so wonderful. Even when they're being shitheads and running against each other in town council elections, they're still lovely characters, and it's been a delight to kind of get to watch them, get see them grow. And I'm just so eager to watch more because I want to see what happens to them. I'm so invested. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, season two, I think season three for me is where I feel like there's the biggest shift, and probably that's because it comes with the finale of season two and happy anniversary, and kind of that feels like a turning point for the series. So for me, I think the key kind of really turns into gear in season three, but I do love season two. I think, like you said, we know who we're playing with now. so we can really throw them into any situation. Mm-hmm. I feel like season two is a really great growth season for a lot of characters, which we'll obviously get into. I feel like if I had negatives for season two, I do have two that come to mind. One of which is the campaign isn't necessarily my favorite storyline. And I don't know if it's because I like Jocelyn, and not that she was like a major antagonist by any means, but I kind of preferred her role as like a really good friend to Moira, and pitting them against each other, I don't think it made for as funny a situations. Like, it was, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze to pull her away from that role to put her in a competitive role with Moira. I just feel like it didn't bear the fruit that, like, I think the show wanted it to. And so the campaign storyline's never really been my favorite. I like the result where now Moira is on town council. I think that's really fun. And, like, obviously I'm excited, you know, I'm excited for you to see what ends up happening with all of that. The other minor negative that I would have is, like, looking through these episodes, I feel like we've really lost Stevie this season. And
completely.
I feel like that's a missed opportunity, because her and David, once we got out of the, like, will they, won't they, David and Stevie sort of thing, and we settled into, like, no, this is a friendship. I feel like then she got sidelined very often. And when she was given, you know, screen time, there were very minor moments. And we've even expanded upon, like, where we think they could have expanded her role in certain episodes. And I'm not going to complain too much about this, Stuart, because I feel like I think instead we got bigger roles for, you know, Bob and Ronnie and, like, other members of the town. I think they got more to do. And so maybe they're like, okay, we have to pull it from somewhere. So we'll pull it from Stevie. But it does feel like there was a real lacking of Stevie and her kind of friendship with David this season.
Yeah, I guess the risk of an ensemble cast like this is that you do have to, if you want to get the spotlight to someone, you have to take it off of someone else. But I think what we kind of talked about previously was that there are ways in which Stevie could have been interwoven into the stories in which Stevie was involved in just better ways, just more involved ways than being, oh, I'm going to go talk to Stevie and set up what I'm going to go do today. And Stevie's going to make a snarky comment. And then that's it. Stevie could have joined David on a lot of the things that David had embarked on. Stevie could have gone with Alexis to the house viewing. Like, there are so many ways in which Stevie could have been present in a way that built up the familiarity that she's getting with the Roses, and not just be this person that is stagely. It felt like Stevie was shackled to that desk for a lot of this season. And I think that was a real kind of problem, because once she's there, it's almost like, okay, well, where do you go from this? Oh, she's just going to be quite snarky behind the desk, and very good at snark. Like, I'm never going to begrudge a bit of Stevie snark, but I want it to also build Stevie's involvement in this world, because I love it when Stevie is that kind of conduit of Schitt's Creek knowledge that gives their, like, David the down low on, like, who's around and kind of what the history is, because they don't know this history. And the only real history of Schitt's Creek that we're getting elsewhere is from Jocelyn and Roland. Occasionally we're getting kind of like a drip from Twyler or Bob or kind of these smaller side characters. But Stevie should be the one that is telling David and Alexis everything that they need to know about this place. And it's just not coming out just yet. But I'm not sure if it's in reaction to season one, because we got a lot of Stevie then. And I think it's just maybe them putting the brakes on a little bit, readjusting. I hope that realigns in season three. I hope you get a little bit more Stevie in a little bit more of a thoughtful way. But I don't know.
Yeah, and again, I really enjoyed this season. It's just because I love the show so much, and because I know what it becomes, what we have in store for future seasons. Mm-hmm. I do feel the need to, like, pick the nits that are in these early seasons and see, you know, just to put a pin in them in terms of, like, let's see if they can correct, in my opinion, what I think is, like, a little bit of a misstep in not using Stevie more, because you loved Stevie in season one. And I don't think mm-hmm. that is an unpopular opinion. I think Stevie and David's friendship is an all-timer, especially in season one. And so to feel like it kind of just fell away in season two in service to maybe some side characters, some other growing plots, it just feels like, oh, I can forgive the campaign stuff because that might work for some people better than it did for me. But losing Stevie, who is David's kind of only friend in town, for the most part, we really don't see much of her, you know, feels a bit like a mistake on their part. But go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, I think that we left season one with David feeling alone and having really nowhere to turn. And then in season two, it opened with that kind of realignment of their friendship and a reestablishment of like David really saying like, you're my best friend kind of thing. And that being acknowledged between the two of them across that kind of season one, season two kind of bridge. So why not lean into it more? Why not kind of establish it? And it does feel as if we could have had something and we've been denied it a little bit, which is why I can understand that you are down on it. Town council, on the other hand, I'm not as down on it as perhaps others are. It's not my favourite, and I think it could have been more succinct. Didn't necessarily even have to be the town council. It could have been brought about by Moira and Jocelyn, I don't know, going up against each other for like a spot on the council for the Jazza Gals or something. Like something mm-hmm. more low-key if it needed to be shorter and more condensed. Or even just it didn't have to be a multi-episode arc, which could have brought down the kind of bickering. It was, again, it was frustrating because we kind of have established Jocelyn as this pinnacle of just niceness. And it is nice to see a different aspect to Jocelyn.
Yeah.
But it's disappointing because I've grown to love her and I'm like, but Jocelyn, why? Why are you being like this? Stop.
Yeah. And I like where we ended up, right? Where she's like, this is too much. I can't take it. Like, I called mm-hmm. someone an effing moron. Like, I did say effing, but I don't call anybody that. So I like where we ended up with it. It just felt like it felt belabored, I think, at a certain point.
Yeah.
Let's do some character breakdowns because we do have the roses to talk through. And let's talk through Johnny, the patriarch of the Rose family. He, I think, has a little bit of a tough season. And maybe we said this in season one, too. I feel like we probably did. It feels like he's really struggling to find his footing. I think when we look at the other roses and we discuss their journeys, I think they've had a larger growth arc from A to B in terms of start of the season to the end of the season. But I don't think we can ignore what happens in the finale of season two being a major turning point for Johnny, being willing to stand up to people he used to call his friends and say, this is where we live. This is what's been happening. I'm going to stand by my new town and my new friends. And, you know, this is what we call home now. It's a major turning point for Johnny. It just feels like much of the season for him is spent trying to find what his next, I don't even know if I want to call it passion project, but like what his next career will be. What is he going mm-hmm. to do to earn money? It feels like we spend a lot of time with him not really knowing what he's going to do next.
I think that's entirely because Johnny doesn't know what he wants to do next. He's a yeah. businessman without a business plan. And he is out at sea, lost, and has no sense of direction of what to do. I felt like Johnny peaked a little bit because Bob's Bagels, as I have been on and on about, like Bob's Bagels should have been a thing.
Yes.
But it was I think the better Johnny episode of the season because of kind of how it worked. Although saying that, Milk Money was a good Johnny episode, perhaps not him, like good for him. But it was a good, yeah. like, kind of Johnny-centric
He was trying something. Yeah, he was trying something. It didn't work out, you know, whether there was a miscommunication. The milk, the unpasteurized milk business didn't exactly work out for the roses. Mm-hmm. But he was he was trying something, at least.
So I feel like there's this kind of almost two competing things with Johnny. You've got Johnny, who is the kind of dependable one of the family, the one that can kind of be the straight man to everyone else being silly. And that kind of peaks a little bit in kind of when he's talking with Bob and getting the kind of workspace for free. And then you have like Bob's Bagels talk. You even have like the mattress situation in estate sale, where he is kind of playing off other characters being absurd and being like incredulous at their behavior. And then it dips when he becomes a bit of a slapstick, when he goes in for like the milk money thing and he becomes the joke that's around, and he's not the straight guy in the situation, but is still acting like the straight guy and kind of being incredulous to other people's shenanigans going around him. But I'm like, buddy, you're the problem in that episode. So I think as he kind of dips in one, he peaks in another, and it leaves us with this kind of sense that Johnny really doesn't know what the hell's going on, because he's like two different things. And it isn't until the very end of the season where he has this incredible moment where he does stand up to his old friends. And I use air quotes saying that because the Taylors are awful.
Mm-hmm.
That he kind of, I think this comes to a head where he is that, he's almost like the one who is the only person in the family who can adequately articulate with sensible scores what Schitt's Creek means to them now, and how they have fallen in love with the place, and how they do appreciate the good things that have happened to him. Because there's no way David, Moira, or Alexis are ever going to say that.
No.
It could only be Johnny. And I think it's there that he finally found his point.
Yeah, Moira even says, like, oh, we're over it. It's not a big deal. And Johnny's like, not quite.
No.
You're right. Yeah. He's the only one of those four at this point in the series that would stand up for the town in this way. And I think that is, like, I know we've been tough on Johnny these two seasons. And I rightfully so, in my opinion, because what is to come with Johnny makes it all worth it. I'm not saying when, I'm not saying how, I'm just saying there is a reason why I feel like we're tough on him in the beginning, because he grows to be so much more in later seasons. And I think this, for a lot of people, you know, the finale of season two is a big turning point. It is when a lot of people fell in love with the show, realized they loved the family so much, you know, on and on and on. I feel like it also is a very, very important marker in Johnny's character as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is kind of the tipping point. This is like BC and, you know, like AD or whatever. It's like, okay, it's before Johnny did the speech and after Johnny did the speech. It's how it feels. So I do think this is like a very, very important pivotal moment for Johnny Rose as a character. Because I'm just picturing all of the things that I know are coming up and just how it feels like they all kind of stem from this moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a great way in which this season, how he's been acting is justified, because if it wasn't for Johnny having this kind of weird sense or lack of sense of direction and becoming a bit of a farce and things like that, I don't think it would have had as much of a punch. Like, if Johnny had been thriving, then it would have been like, well, of course you love it, like, you've been really kind of supported. But he has had support. Things, at least by his perspective, haven't been going incredibly well, and so when he does stand up for them, it means, or at least it feels more like, it feels so much more substantial when he does it like that. And we've had moments previously where David has had this kind of turning point moment where he kind of admits that he's lonely and that Stevie is his friend and is like, and it means so much to him. We've had Alexis kind of having a real moment with like kind of the Mutt situation, the realization of that. So we're finally getting these real big, significant character moments where they can turn a corner. Now, Johnny's has happened right at the end of the season, so I'm only looking forward to what comes next for him. But at this stage, I'm like,
Yeah.
I've got to see it, Johnny. You've got to follow through.
There's a lot to love about Johnny in season three. I do think the first two seasons, and I say this without having like, you know, it's not like I recently did a full rewatch of the seasons again, but like with, you know, with clear barriers of like, this was season three, this was season four. You know, a lot of times I'm just watching all of it and it's hard to break down exactly what's what. But I do think this is the harshest we will probably be on Johnny, is these first two seasons. I think from here, there's more, without, again, me spoiling anything, but
that's so good to hear.
Yes. But let's talk about Moira. Talk about her time in season two. I think two important staples of Moira Rose's story are in this season, being the Jazzagals, her joining the Jazzagals. I think that's big for her in terms of finding community, finding friends beyond just Jocelyn. There's a whole group of girls now that she's hanging out with that she kind of wants to be like the matriarch of, and then quickly is kind of put into her place as like, whoa, okay, this isn't your mother's community theater project. These women can sing, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, so she's a little bit put in her place right away, which I really love. And then, of course, we also have the campaign storyline, which we've already kind of talked about a little bit. But Stuart, what did you think of the Jazzagals? Did it live up to what you expected it to be when they were introduced?
I'll get onto the Jazzagals, and I will answer your question mm-hmm. in just 1 second, but I just have to take umbrage with the fact that you think the two touchstones of Moira's story are the Jazzagals and the town council. You don't mention the chicken enchiladas and folding in the cheese.
She did. That pivotal character moment. to fold in the cheese. She did learn to fold in the cheese. Yeah, we cannot forget folding in the cheese. I was like, when you were starting your sentence, I'm like, what else does she do? I'm like racking my brain. I'm like, what did she do? What else did she do? Yes, of course. Folding in the cheese. She has learned.
No, the Jazzagals was, I think, a first real moment of Moira really kind of thinking long term of like, this is a place where she lives. And it's funny to see that kind of shift in mindset. And it all comes about from a moment of jealousy when they're in the cafe. And she hears them all kind of having a laugh, having a gossip and stuff. And then asks Twyla over and is like, what's going on over there? Like, what's this kind of mother's meeting almost? And wants to get the kind of the download on it. And feels this pang of jealousy of just like, oh, well, I want to be involved in that. I want to do what they're doing. And it's because we had this weird relationship where I think Jocelyn thought of herself and Moira as being friends, and Moira thinking of Jocelyn more as just someone who happens to occasionally bring them Nanaimo bars and is generally quite nice to them occasionally. And seeing this almost reciprocal thing of Moira wanting perhaps not a friendship. I don't think that she went into it thinking, I want friends. I think she just wanted involvement.
I think she also wants an audience.
Friendships come about. Well, there's that as well. Yeah.
In a very similar way. Another thing I really love about this show is you can so see how these people are related at times, where Alexis sometimes just wants people to admire and adore her. And I feel like Moira definitely wants that as well. She wants attention, right? She's used to the spotlight. And I think she sees the Jazzagals as an opportunity for the spotlight. And same thing with the campaign to an extent. It's an opportunity for her to shine. And I think what she gets out of it is not necessarily what she was looking for. Mm-hmm. Which is community. That's ultimately, I feel like, what we're at least starting to see. Like, I feel like we've planted those seeds a little bit, and we're seeing them take root of them finding community in this little town. And the Jazzagals and the campaign are two massive kind of seeds within that root system, if you'll excuse my metaphor.
But it's nice to see how the Jazzagals does flow into the town council. Like, it's a community project. She takes pride in it, and she does begin to kind of like have a sense of ownership. I mean, she's taking calls from people later in the season, talking about their kind of getting certain notes right and kind of being prepared, or assigning certain, I think it's like singing roles to different people. Like, mm-hmm. she is really actively getting involved in these things, and seeing her slip into this kind of mindset of, well, I'm being involved in the community and stuff, it then makes her look at her environment and take a sense of pride in it, and then be outraged at when it is a dump and she wants it to be cleaned up. And then that leads to the town council. The way in which that flows through nice and logically is really great to see. Again, other sitcoms probably wouldn't be as good with the kind of logical conclusions of storylines like this. It would have been like, oh, Moira's doing this because it's a like a funny little jaunt kind of thing. But it all builds to this sense that she is growing to... love is a strong word. I think tolerate Schitt's Creek and think of it as a home, or at least a long-term kind of situation that they're going to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But the way in which we get to the town council situation and the conflict with Jocelyn, it's not the strongest.
Yeah. But I do like that we get there. I think, like you said, I think it went on a bit too long. I feel like instead of making it an entire season long arc for her, I feel like I could have done with maybe a half a season, you know, maybe not quite the entire time spent on this campaign. I like what it means for Moira, though, in terms of her getting involved. She cares. In order to want to be on the town council, you have to at least somewhat care about what is going on in your town. And that's big for Moira to care in that way where she wants it to be better. She wants to help. And for all the crap we give Moira, you know, about wanting the spotlight and, you know, being a little self-centered at times, she does want better for the town, if not even just for it to be like, well, I live here. It has to be of a certain caliber because I live here. She at least wants better things for the town. And so if that's what the campaign storyline gives us, then I'm at least, you know, I feel a little bit better about it. But something else that kind of is sprinkled in dribs and drabs this season is Moira growing closer to her family as well. Like, the main ones I'm thinking of is in Bob's Bagels when Alexis gets sick. And Moira, like, actually taking care of her, like trying to take care of her in her own Moira way. Which feels very unusual. And from, like, you know, we know in season one, she doesn't even know Alexis's middle name. You know, there's like lots of funny plot lines about like how the Rose kids were essentially raised by their nannies, not by their parents. And so we see that happen. And then, of course, later on in the very end of Happy Anniversary, she tells her kids she loves them, which again, at the beginning of that very same episode, she's saying, like, you guys are being weird, like the incestuous Bloomfields, like, stop being so touchy-feely, like, this is not us. And she's telling, by the end of the episode, she's telling her kids she loves them. Like, this is, these are leaps and bounds for a character like Moira. So I love that, like, we're getting to see that journey. And something that's really nice, Stuart, is this show doesn't overdo it. The growth comes in, like, so slowly sometimes that you almost miss it. Like, it takes a long time for characters to kind of grow and evolve in a way that feels so much more natural than a lot of shows.
Yeah. There's no kind of unnecessary swells of emotional music. There's no kind of, like, long pauses on people when they say something dramatic. It's like, things get said and the scene moves on and we cut to something else. But we as watchers get to ruminate, we kind of sit, we let it settle, and we see this, like, slow little progression over all these episodes. And when it comes to Happy Anniversary at the end, and we see the kind of culmination of all of these little moves just make its way towards this kind of, like, big, not really a huge crescendo, but just a nice, lovely moment, it pays off in absolute dividends. And it's a testament, again, to great writing. Again, I'm not too kind of, I don't think that Moira has had as pivotal of a moment as other characters in terms of their growth. I don't think she's really had this outlandish, no, I really love it here, because I still think inherently Moira is Moira, and there is this whole need of being the center of attention, perhaps being slightly selfish in kind of her own personal motivations. But it's nice seeing community, friendship, becoming more of these things, and her speaking kind of more honestly about things. Like, I think it was last season when she had the kind of chat with Jocelyn at the garden party that her and Roland put on, and we kind of got this almost like breaking down of a barrier with Moira. Yeah. And I feel like there are others to come down, and I feel like she's going to be the last one to, like, crack. I feel like we've broken two in the kids at first. I think Johnny we've just got through to him. I think Moira's going to be next up. Could be wrong, who knows, but...
Well, and it's so smart to bring up the scene between her and Jocelyn where she's talking about having come from a town like Schitt's Creek that's very small. And I do think that being in her past is what has taken her so long to get to the point of acceptance. And you know, because she comes from this sort of town, so she has almost like... negative associations with it of like, I wanted out of that town so badly. Now I feel like I'm back there again. And what did I do in my life to deserve having to be back in this sort of a town when I had grown it? I outgrew it, essentially. So it feels like it might take her a little bit longer to embrace the town, you know, maybe a little bit slower than some of the other Roses. But anything else on Moira before we talk about David?
I mean, the Jazza Gal's audition, folding in the cheese, like, she is without a doubt the funniest person on this show when it comes to individual scenes and just pulling focus. Like, no one can compete with Catherine O'Hara. Don't even try, because she is an absolute goddess and she's wonderful. And I'm so happy that she is who she is, because it's just absurd bonkers. And I love it every time she's on screen. That's bad.
You can't have anybody else in this role. It wouldn't work.
No, it really wouldn't.
And I honestly, you can say that about all of the roses. I truly, truly believe that. I think this is one of those shows that thrives because of the people who are playing these characters. And it feels like in their own way, they each shape and mold the characters. And the best television shows, that's how it works, is the writers, which, you know, obviously are also two of them, kind of see what's working with the actor playing them and kind of write that into the character. And it really feels, not that I'm saying any of them are these characters, but, you know, I feel like they've given input and they've worked with the actors to kind of make these characters their own.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
You're my 2 a.m. watch out, shred the couch on a whim. My little fluffy crazy cat who don't play nice with the kids. You're my danger floof. How but I'll keep it safe where you poop. You're an unnatural beast with natural litter under your feet, yeah. At least in your box it's safe. No more dust all over the place. Everybody without clay, say meow.
World's best cat litter for the world's best cat.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about David. David Rose. This is a big season for David. He gets a job at the Blouse Barn, a job that sticks. He had a couple other jobs that didn't quite stick so well, but he gets a job at the Blouse Barn and he is going to reinvent this place. He's going to, essentially he's making it his own. Now, you know, may or may not have worked quite well for any of them, including Wendy. But ultimately, his instincts are what save Wendy from losing, leaving a lot of money on the table. David's instincts solely, his willingness to push back and fight for more money is what gets Wendy more money and gets himself money. Like, 40 grand in the bank. First of all, 40 grand is a lot of money. Like, not just for the roses in this station in their life. I would love to have an extra 40 grand just hanging around in my bank account. So 40 grand is a lot of money.
An extra 40 grand? I'd take 40 grand on its own.
Exactly. Yes, I would. Yes, please. It's more than I have. Please. 40 grand. Yes. It's a lot of money. And this is a big deal for David. I was really pleased with what we got with David this season. It feels like great growth for him in terms of having a job that he actually gave a shit about. You know what I mean? It's not like he took the job at the Blouse Barn and was like, great, I'm just gonna like sell skanky clothes and call it a day and go home. He was actually trying in his own Davidly way, you know?
Yeah. It's phenomenal to see David apply this kind of thinking that I think has been almost like a defense mechanism, because I get the sense that David is quite often mocked for being who he is, but David owns it and never compromises on being who he is. He is just who he is and is unashamed of it. And in coming to the Blouse Barn, he applies that logic to the role. He turns it into a place that he wants it to be. Admittedly, business-wise, runs it into the ground for Wendy. So that's not entirely the best. But in a reaction to it being closed and then having an awful offer from the Blouse Barn Australia, possibly Blouse House, who knows, is that he's like, no, we deserve more. And this is why I love David and his uncompromising kind of sense of self-worth, is that he is like, no, we do deserve more. We do deserve better than this. And if it wasn't for that, Wendy wouldn't have had anything close to the amount of money that we speculate that she did get. David certainly wouldn't have got 40 grand out of it. But David, not only, like, he gave something to Wendy and got something for himself, all because he refused to say, no, I will not bow down to this, and I am worth more than this, which I think is just so, so good, because we saw that reaction at the end of season one with David, and that being almost problematic in a way, in the fact that he was like, no, I'm better than this town, I need to leave, kind of, and rejecting it. And now he's applying this self-worth alongside this acceptance of the town, acceptance of kind of what it gives him, and used it to contribute and to help others in a way. Not altruistically, a little bit selfishly, but it works out that way, and it's kind of wonderful to see.
And we can see that he's like good at what he does in a certain way, right? When he gives Jocelyn her own little makeover for her campaign, she looks great. You know, like he's really good at what he excels at. And it's really good to see David in his own element. You know, he's making money. He makes money that he even ends up lending to his father to pay off their tab at the cafe. Like, he has a company car for a little while, you know, like, he's doing well for himself. And that is no small feat for a person like David, to do it all on his own with no help from anybody else. It's a big deal. And, you know, on the more personal side of things, we do see, I love the scenes that we get between David and Alexis. Again, I think their like sibling bond is so real and like lovely. He learns how to ride a bike thanks to Alexis. He gives her a hug when her relationship ends with Mutt. Like, they have these really fun, cute moments that I absolutely adore, because they're sibling. They do feel like real siblings, where they bicker and argue, and like she like, you know, when she gets stuck with the bicycle, she's walking out of the room and she goes like, I hate you, David, I hate you, you know, like, it's just very, very sibling-esque, and I really appreciate it. I going from David is leaving Schitt's Creek and running away in episode one to him dancing with his entire family at the end of the finale, like, that's kind of a perfect summation of where David starts and ends this season, you know?
Mm-hmm. And for them to return to, like, a barn party all over again, like, it's just, it's nice to have that kind of where they were, where they are comparison, and it being completely different. And to see David smile, and that kind of final shot where he looks wistfully out towards everything and seems incredibly happy, is just, it's so great to see him, because he was so hurt at the end of last season. And I think a lot of people, me included, who kind of were watching, felt for him so much. Like, I just wanted to reach out and be like, David, it's not that bad, buddy, like, you're gonna be okay. And to see that he is now okay is really, really, really good. I think the only downside I would say with David's whole story is the whole lingering Stevie thing, like that kind of unnecessary scene that we've talked about in The Candidate, where they go to the dive bar and kind of have the kiss thing. I think that was kind of a little unnecessary, maybe. But otherwise, David had he didn't have a lot of stories, really. It was mostly the Blouse Barn, his kind of thriving career and things associated with it. I will say I've absolutely adored the whole pin scene and forgetting that, and that kind of whole shenanigan. Like, David with Johnny shouting is just comedy gold, because so the good. Two of them just bickering back and forth is just wonderful. And to be able to play that with your actual dad And to have that kind of, it's so special. And I don't think that you can get chemistry like it. I think that the actors are as good as they come. And I don't think you still quite can ever nail that true kind of thing of just, my dad's shouting at me and I'm angry at him, so I'm going to shout back. And it's like, but I shouldn't be shouting at him. It just kind of escalates. It's gold.
So good. Mm-hmm. Let's talk through Alexis, because she goes through quite the journey in season two. We start the season with she's maybe possibly engaged to Ted, but also just slept with Mutt. Then she has to break up with Ted, which is very difficult for her. She eventually gets with Mutt. It doesn't last very long. They break up. Honestly, it's only a few episodes that they're actually together. And she really struggles. She struggles to figure out who she is when she's single, because Alexis does feel like the type who's not even necessarily always been in a relationship, but has always been surrounded by people who love and appreciate and adore her and are willing to pay her compliments every moment of the day. And for her, being alone is difficult, and she has to learn how to be by herself. And so I think a lot of the season is her kind of figuring out how to navigate that. And then also ultimately landing a job with Ted at the vet's office, which is fascinating, right? Because they broke up and he really struggled with all of that. And so now she's back working for Ted. She has a job. She even looks for an apartment that she, you know, ultimately doesn't end up taking, but she can afford to look for an apartment. So these are all like really big, big things. I know, like, I mean, they may seem small when you're thinking about a person's life. It's like, yeah, of course you're going to, like, you know, break up with one guy, start dating another, have another breakup. But like, these were big, impactful moments for Alexis, especially getting to see her have the realization of like, whether or not we actually truly believe that like Mutt knew me, you know, I actually showed him who I was. Like, you know, I could quibble with that, but she felt like he did. And I guess that's all that really matters, is she feels like he knew her. And now she feels this immense loss of that relationship. And these feel like big points in Alexis's overall story.
Yeah. I mean, we can be third parties and we can quibble with whether or not it was that serious or things like that. But her feelings are her feelings. I think that they are absolutely sincere. I think that she certainly feels this. She seems to grieve more for the Mutt relationship than she does for the Ted relationship. And I'm not sure if that's just because I think with the ending of Mutt's came an awareness for herself that this kind of validity was a thing, and that, you know, what she had been kind of secretly wanting, maybe kind of chasing, all wasn't all it was made up to be. And maybe it came with a kind of little thing of self-reflection as well, which is why it was kind of fairly profound for her. But her journey this season has been absolutely my favorite. Like, I, for one thing, every time Alexis is on screen, I know it's going to be a banger of a scene, because she is just incredibly funny. But also, I know that it's contributing to her wider growth as a character. I think the only real scene that we've had her in this season where it hasn't been kind of framing her in this more kind of growing up almost storyline that we're getting from her has been the whole milk money thing. But we get to see her be an incredible liar and give some more backstory into her kind of history of all the kind of shenanigans that she's been up to. But the whole, we were so down on Mutt when, I mean, we still have been really down on Mutt, but I've got to give credit where credit's due. If it wasn't for Mutt, we wouldn't have had any of this, because Ted alone wouldn't have been enough of a breakup to warrant this. It had to come about from her chasing something that was superficial, that was surface level, finding out there's no depth, and feeling that, or being offered an opportunity to self-reflect after that fact. And if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have got it. So I've got to give some credit there. Won't necessarily give it to Mutt, but I'm just saying Mutt was a part of the whole process. But the way in which she's gone from this has opened up to Twyla, has gone to Stevie for advice. I like how she's kind of seeping out into the world. She's kind of, she's establishing her gal pals almost of, and she's using this wonderful kind of skill that I think we talked about previously, which is that she is just an incredible talker to new people. Like, she just can talk to anyone and it not be this weird thing that you've got to get over a hurdle with. And so to her to go into a job that does involve talking to people, I mean, Ted warns her off quite early in that it's not just talking to people. There are actual administrative duties alongside it. But for her to take the job, and we were so, well, I mean, I say we, you knew what was coming. But for me to be really skeptical of whether or not it would work out, and then for her to thrive when she sells the expensive little coffin for the pet, like, oh, it's just phenomenal. Like, I love to see her thrive. I love to see it. And it's so not what I expected at the beginning of the season. Not when she's shouting across a field, "We slept together!" From that to working in a vet. Like, what is going on?
Yeah. And it's, I know what's going to happen. You didn't expect for her to necessarily thrive in this environment. And of course, I didn't when I first watched the show either. Mm-hmm. I was very skeptical of how is she actually going to be at this job? Is she going to slack off? And we did get the jokes of like, oh my gosh, Ted, you've been reading my mind. I've been wanting to ask you to leave early all week, right? Mm-hmm. But when push comes to shove, she's a people person. She knows how to talk to people. And she handles that aspect, that really, really difficult aspect of the job very well. And it's just, it shines a light on like, yes, we are supposed to laugh at these characters a lot of the time because they're a little out of touch with reality. You know, they don't exactly know how to live like poor people. they grew up with immense wealth. And so they don't necessarily know how to just be normal people in a small town doing everyday jobs. But we get these little glimpses of what each of these characters' like superpower is. And Alexis is just so good with people. She's so good at making people feel at ease. She, you know, in season one, when she goes to that party with Stevie, she's like, this eagle likes to fly alone or whatever the heck she says. Like she knows how to just do things independently with other people, if that makes sense. You know, she doesn't need a chaperone. She doesn't need a buddy. She feels comfortable just walking up to a group of strangers and introducing herself. And I do think it took the breakup with Mutt for her to kind of assert some independence. I think a lot of times she leans on other people. And so it was really nice to see her kind of take initiative, get a job, help the family, and talk to Ted. You know, I think her and Ted having a friendship has been really fun and really enjoyable to watch. And because he is someone, you know, we get the scene with him when him and Alexis break up where he's hugging Johnny and crying and saying how self-absorbed she is, but she's so charming. He understands who she is. That is who she is. And so I completely agree with you. This was an incredible Alexis season. And not just that, a really lovely Annie Murphy season. As someone who is by far the least well-known person coming into the show, you are standing next to behemoths in Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy. Like, these are massive stars. And she not even just holds her own, but shines in this show. That is like huge, huge credit to Annie Murphy for making this character her own. And like, not everyone could play this character and make us love them, you know, but she does such a great job. This does feel like a massive, massive season for Alexis in terms of growth. Maybe she doesn't have that scene that Johnny does in Happy Anniversary. It feels like it comes in dribs and drabs a little bit more. We say a little bit of growth there, a little bit of growth here, you know, throughout the season. And it's a really great Alexis season. And Alexis is one of those characters that I think, a little bit like Johnny at the start, you're kind of like, I don't love them in the way that like you instantly love Moira or you instantly love David. But as time goes on, gosh, Alexis is just so lovable. And this season feels like the season it kind of really takes off for her.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah, completely. And to echo your points about Annie Murphy and like kind of what she's done to stand out as much as she had, but again, not pull focus in a way that detracts from others. I think it just fits in perfectly to do that with a group of like kind of main characters like in Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy, and then all these side characters that are all part of the same comedy troupe from Canada, Second City TV and stuff, like Bob being a writer, for crying out loud. Like, they all know each other and get each other's humor, and she gels with it so incredibly well. Like, as much as we want to gush about the characters, we also have to gush about the actual talent on screen here as well. Annie Murphy, star.
She's so good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk through some of our character rankings here. Because we're gonna rank the same characters that we did last season. So to remind you all, we have the Roses. So we have Johnny, Moira, David, Alexis. Then we have some more of our side characters in Stevie, Roland, Jocelyn, Mutt, and Ted. Maybe in the future we can add in like a Ronnie or a Bob. I don't know. It feels like we'd almost have to separate out some rankings at that point because they're not exactly main characters. They're more side characters, you know, tertiary, secondary, whatever you want to call them. But that's what we're doing. Yes, Scott.
So we've got the nine, right?
Yes.
And we're going to be ranking them first to ninth. And we're going to do this for each of our rankings. So let's bring up this little chart that we've got going here.
Look at this beauty. If you're not watching us on YouTube, well, you got to go there now because this is a beautiful graphic. Look at our faces. They're so lovely.
Okay. So how do we want to do this? Do we want to go first to ninth? Or
it's always more fun to go bottom to top, I think.
Marvelous. Okay. So at ninth, let's check out who we both put. You put Mutt, and so did I, shockingly. Mutt's the freaking worst.
Mutt is the worst. Mutt is the worst. And yes, we can possibly give him a modicum of credit for an Alexis growth arc. But truly, I'm not letting this man take Alexis's, you know, I'm not letting him get credit for all of Alexis's growth journey. He mostly still sucks. He lives in a freaking barn. He's sawing wood in the middle of his living room. Make it make sense. You know,
he's dating Tennessee, Tallahassee, whatever her name is.
Who cares? He shaved his beard and then he was like, oh, well, Tennessee likes it, so I'm going to grant back. Ugh.
Yeah. No.
He sucks.
In eight.
The worst.
In eight.
Yeah. We tied again. Are we tied again? No, we chose the same.
We chose identical. The same.
Yes.
Roland. Father of Mutt, the person who we have to blame for Mutt and a plethora of other things. Yeah, Brent is not great.
It was really bad. Like, the thing is he wasn't like super, super present all season. But when he was, it was like you know what it is? He has the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. He could be so kind and so generous with his truck, with his time, you know, being a good friend to the Roses. And then he goes and keeps them up all night in the motel room next to them playing loud music. Like, he can be awful.
I almost forgot about that.
it's terrible.
He has some really choice moments. And I rank him higher than Mutt, purely for the fact that he does have these high highs that we talk about. Like, he does have moments where he's incredibly generous. He's clearly a lovely husband to Jocelyn in the sense that she appreciates him. So he has to get marks for that, surely.
Yeah, no, of course. He does. It's just, gosh, he does some really bad stuff too. Like, he just is like, if someone kept me all night playing, I would be so mad. I would be so mad. Yeah, no, and the whole campaign science thing, like, gosh. Yeah, it's not great from Roland. But our next number seven is where we take a little diversion, the two of us. We part ways at number seven.
Unreal. And
this might be controversial. I put Stevie Budd. Here, listen. Stevie didn't have much to do this season. Like, what am I even ranking her with? Like, what does she even have going on? Like, not really much at all.
I see Stevie as the base. I see Stevie as, like, kind of ground level. And I see people as being either worse or better than Stevie. Because, as you said, Stevie didn't really do that much in this season. Johnny had a really fantastic moment. at the end of the season.
Lest we forget Milk Money, Stuart. We loved Milk Money for Johnny. That was fun.
As a viewer, yes. It was so... I'm still angry thinking about how he was blaming Alexis for getting the measurements wrong without actually giving real measurements of anything. Like, yeah. And yelling at David for the pin situation when he's the one asking his son for money. Like, come on, dude. So I put Johnny below Stevie because I think Johnny had far worse moments than Stevie. Mm-hmm. Stevie's true neutral for me, so...
Yeah, I guess yeah. I just penalize people more for being like absent or boring than doing like, you know, having highs and lows. It's like at least we'll deliver the highs for Johnny, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, number six, we also differ. This is where I put your girl, Jocelyn. Here's the thing. I still know she was talking shit. OK, she was doing dirty politics. All right. She was. And she wasn't like as fun of a friend this season to Moira. Where were the Nanaimo bars this time, Jocelyn? Where were they? No, instead, you come over and you're like, oh, here's our leftovers. We had a great campaign party last night. You're going to have to step up your game because I'm going to beat you. It's like, well, that's not very neighborly now, is it, Jocelyn?
It's not. But she does bring leftovers. Like, everything is... I feel like she wants to lean into the dirty politics. She wants to take the advice. Like, I imagine that on her shoulders is, like, a little angel version of herself telling her to do the good thing, to not say the F word, being the actual EFF. And then Roland on the other shoulder, being the devil, being like, come on, we've got to be awful politicians here. We've got to be, like, horrible people. And so, like, she has that negative influence, but she kind of moderates it a little bit. She does, like, kind of bring over the leftovers. She does make the signs for Moira, gets the kids to make them. She does welcome in Moira to the Jazzer Gals, and it is probably the most welcoming when Moira turns up and gives the weird, like, kind of scatting audition. It's...
so ridiculous.
I can't say that the negatives outweigh the positives for me this season, but I might be biased because I absolutely adore Jocelyn.
You do,
so
yeah.
So I'm putting her in sixth. I put her in fifth.
Yeah, and you have Stevie at sixth, which you kind of already established. This is your baseline.
Yes, exactly. So Stevie being the baseline is because, I mean, like, what has she done this season? Like, that's absolutely nothing, really. So for me, baseline's six.
Yeah. In fifth, so you have Jocelyn and I have Johnny. This is where I established Johnny. And again, he does struggle a lot this season. I feel like the finale for me gives him a massive, massive boost. And maybe part of it is like a little bit of a pity spot. Like, he probably deserved to be a little bit lower on this list, but I pity him a little bit. But I really just love the speech in the finale. It feels like such a like massive point in his favor to do what the rest of his family certainly isn't willing to do. And it can be a very difficult thing to do. Like, standing up to people that used to be your friends, that's not easy, especially when you look terrible. You know what I mean? Like, you're living in this dinky town. You've lost all your money. You're here with your friends who they say look like he works in agriculture. Like, they're complete assholes. But it still makes it very difficult to stand up to them. And so I thought Johnny deserved to be in fifth place here because he did stand up for them. And yeah, more to come on Johnny. But I don't know. I thought he deserved it. He earned his spot in fifth place.
An interesting choice.
Oh my gosh. Okay, what about fourth place here, Stuart? We are matching yet again.
We are indeed. Our boy Ted Mullins.
Teddy! He earned it.
Beat Johnny for both of us. Makes his way into the top four. Technically, does that make him part of the family? Who knows? But I feel like he's absolutely earned this. He has been a delight because he came back into the season midway through, glow up, So you've got to like kind of acknowledge the glow up, but then also kind of gives Alexis the job, seems to have moved on, seems to have processed his own stuff in his own time. Ted's just a delight. How can you not rate this guy?
I love Ted. I just love him so much. He's so sweet. He is so sweet. Like, here's the thing. Alexis broke his heart. And he talks about this, like how long it took him to get over her, how difficult it was, how he could stop crying. And yet, when Alexis needs help, not only does he offer to like buy her a coffee because she says she forgot her, you know, wallet or whatever, he offers her a job when he had he had more qualified people that were going, that were applying for that job. He offers her a job. He doesn't have to do that. He goes out of his way to help Alexis. He is so kind and so sweet. And I just find him so incredibly endearing. He won the breakup. We got to give him credit for that. And just this guy, I love him so much. I am a Ted apologist. I mean, I think you probably could tell a little bit of this last season when we talked about like Ted is doing too much. Like he proposes too soon. And I'm like, yeah, but he's Ted because he's so freaking cute. And I love and adore him. Ted in fourth feels right. Ted just deserves to be here. And I'm glad you're appreciating Ted as well, because it's important that you do. He's incredible. And I love him.
Incredible. We're fairly aligned on three as well. This is kind of wild. We are so in sync. Third place, Moira Rose.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like every season it's tough to not want to put Moira very high, because crab pull, like how do you I don't know how to rank this, you know, like when I just
love
see
that your default Moira quote is from an episode in season one.
Of course it is, because she's crab pull. It's so perfect. Yeah. like how do we rank this?
I am approachable.
What do you do with that? You know, like she's incredible. She's talented. Yeah. She's a star. She won the campaign, maybe because her opponent dropped out because she did some dirty politicking, but she won the campaign. And as we established when we talked about her character breakdown, she has made significant strides in like forming a community here and actually somewhat tolerating the town that she now lives in. So yeah, she's earned number three. I think.
Yeah. I think Moira has done some things that I think if other characters did them, I would like rank them lower for it. Like she's had some absurd moments. Like her son is missing and she's going on about a freaking bag.
It's her grandmother's bag, Stuart. It was passed down for generations so that women could leave their husbands in a pinch. Okay? It's important.
I don't care. It's horrendous. Her son has had a breakdown and she's carrying him out a bag. Like, it's the worst thing. Because it's Moira, she gets a pass. I don't know why. You can't not give her high grades. Falling in cheese is just iconic. The Jazzagal situation, like the audition for that, iconic. Her freaking out about the mattress in the estate sale is just hilarious. Like, she has a moment every single episode where she stands out as an absolute nugget of comedy gold. And so you have to give her flowers when she is that dependable for laughs. And I can't vote her down. I refuse to.
No sane person can, is the thing. She's so funny. She has an entire episode revolving around trying to get her children to look up nudes of herself on the internet. How do you, like, and it's so funny and it's so brilliant. No, Moira Rose in third is exactly where she needs to be. And here's where things get interesting. Because obviously anyone who's paying attention knows that David and Alexis are the two that are left. And we actually have them in different spots. This is fascinating.
Outrageous.
It's not stop it. I think there's like, you know, a few hairs is the differentiator.
Yeah.
Is that a word? Did I
It is now. It's our podcast. We make the rules.
It's a very, very small difference between them, I think.
Yeah.
And I have Alexis in second and David in first. You have David in second and Alexis in first.
Do indeed.
And let's do this way. I'm going to give you my pitch for why David deserves the top spot, and then you can give me your pitch on why Alexis deserves the top spot.
Go for it.
I think when we look at David's growth arc from the first episode of this season to the last episode of this season, it is like incredible how much he has grown in one season. To go from running away from his problems and trying to literally just leave town to escape them all, to having 40K, a little bit of a nest egg in the bank to decide what he wants to do with, and to have somewhat found at least something he's good at, right? Like where he knows fashion, he knows designing, he knows how to make things look good, how to make people look good. That to me is massive, to go from that point at the beginning of the season to the end of the season, and to be willing to stand up to someone and say, no, Wendy, do not just take the 10 grand. You need to stand up for yourself. You are worth more than that. And to get a piece of that pie, like, that is huge for David. I just feel like we've seen a massive shift in David. He's much more independent. He's not relying on other people to help him get a job, to help him do things. He's asserted so much independence this season that to go from negative dollars in the bank and like buying $90 face cream off at like in Paris or something that he has to charge to a credit card that no one is paying for at this point, to now having a little nest egg in the bank and being able to support his family is huge. I think this is a massive season for David. And I totally understand Alexis also has like an incredible growth arc that I will let you explain to the people. And that's why I had her in second.
See, I would go on the kind of stump for Alexis here, but I'm not going to go down without, you know, throwing some fists towards David here at the moment. He ran a business into the ground. Let's not forget this. He is the architect of his own demise. Mm-hmm. Who couldn't remember his own PIN. Yes, I am absolutely criticizing something that I criticized Johnny for, but I don't care. He forgot his PIN that was given to him one day ago. It was ridiculous. David had some really silly moments, but no, I completely agree with everything you've said. Like, David's journey has been phenomenal. And to see where he was at the end of last season and see where he is at the end of this season is, it's so heartwarming. And I can't not put him at the top-ish of my list. I think the reason for me why Alexis just kind of pips it a little bit more is because for her, I think she's, in this season alone, had the most emotional growth. I think we had a lot of David's emotional growth kind of tailed in at the end of last season as well, which is why I kind of attribute it to be more kind of spread out. Whereas I feel like Alexis had a real episode 1, episode 13, here's where we go. Whereas David's has been a bit of a longer kind of trajectory. And I can't not praise her. Like, we gushed about kind of Annie Murphy and kind of how she has portrayed this character so well, and I can't deny that every time Alexis is on screen, I kind of just I instantly start kind of grinning from ear to ear, because I just know it's going to be a great scene, and it's either going to propel the story forward, or it's going to be incredibly funny. It's always going to be one of those two things. But for me, I don't know. I think the two of them are so close. Like, I love to see the two siblings both having the same trajectory. Like, it's so heartwarming to see both grow and thrive and not have one go through a real kind of like downward trajectory and there be like almost like a savior moment from the other one that picks them back up and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just lovely to see them both go upon independent routes and thrive in their own different ways. And I can't be down on the fact that we've both got these two as high as we both have. And like you said before, it's just a smidge between them.
It's a hair. And, you know, I'll throw a little bit of shade Alexis's way in terms of She really did pour many, many gallons of milk down the drain for Johnny, which wasn't great and is honestly the reason that he needs to borrow money from David. And also, I mean, she cleans up after herself well with the whole, dead cat situation. But definitely not the ideal way to tell someone that their pet has passed away is to say, well, he would like these treats if he weren't dead. Not great. She recovered well. But of course, no, I think Alexis is incredible. I think this season is really great for all of the roses, but most especially the David and Alexis for sure.
Yeah. And just to pick you up on that one point saying that like she cleans up after herself, she doesn't actually do that either. She just shoves it all under her own bed and hides it away from David.
She does. So, yeah. She does. Oh my gosh, incredible. Okay, well let's do some revealing of the Simply the Best and the Disgruntled Pelican, because we have some winners and we have some losers. Stuart, did you look? Do you already know who has won the Simply the Best?
I did have a peek because, and you know I did because I sent you a rather unhinged message where I did all the maths on working out points per episode because I was like, I have to make a point in this podcast and I have to make it. The top is, I think, unsurprising, is it not? Really?
Yeah, I mean, David won this season. I will say it was a tighter race than last season. Last season, Moira just wiped the floor with absolutely everybody. Mm-hmm. This season, David wins with 7 points, and Moira is a very close second with 5. So it wasn't a blowout by any means, but I do feel like, I think it's interesting that David was the winner. He matched, my character rankings. I also had him as my number one character. But Alexis, who we both put in second, or I put in second, you put in first, she actually wasn't even the second point getter. That was Moira with 5. But Alexis did come in third with 4. So I think it's interesting. I think, like, overall, you look at, like I said, I think it's dribs and drabs with Alexis. She doesn't have, like, a blowout episode like Johnny for Happy Anniversary. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because looking at the numbers, like Alexis only got like kind of 1 point in any episode. That was like the highest amount of points that she got in any particular episode. And I think a lot of those are probably from me being quite generous because I kind of was so endeared to her kind of story arc. Whereas you've got other characters who have kind of big clusters of either positives or negatives because they've had big moments, whether it's been good or bad. And to see kind of other characters like Alexis get a more consistent kind of more positive ranking is maybe a detriment to this rather flawed system that we've built here, but who cares? This is fun.
Yeah, exactly. we both have our MVP of the season being David. I think that makes sense. LVP of the season, the Disgruntled Pelican. I put Roland. I mostly am trying to look at like the main people on the, I try to give it to people who are like around for a while, and like seriously waking me up and keeping me up all night is the quickest way to make me hate you. And so Roland got my Disgruntled Pelican for the season. In terms of points, I also matched him because I matched our point system. He had -10. He had a really bad season. Like, no one else was even close to that. Like, the next lowest point getter was Bob with -5. Like, -10 is a lot, Roland. You should be ashamed of yourself, I think.
It should be worthwhile noting that he got most of those points for 2 episodes. I think the one that's obvious is the motel guest, which is where he obviously earned the worst. The other one, surprisingly, is for the shortest scene in an early episode. It's family dinner at the beginning where he is telling Moira to, like, where he's like giving up the fact that they are not using the kitchen.
Oh, he's a terrible husband.
Yeah, he's just a terrible husband to Jocelyn. And we just were like outraged. We're like, no, you're not getting away with that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was really tempted to put Roland in as my LVP. However, upon doing the math, and I will say math for our European listeners, Bev and Don Taylor, they only got minus 3 points. However, if we look at their average across all the episodes they appeared in, and if we work out points per episode as a percentage, let's look at the percentages. David ends up with a plus 53%. That means 53% most valuable person.
Okay.
Are simply the best. They end up with minus 300%.
That's great.
The closest that comes to them is both Roland and Bob, surprisingly, who both end up with minus 83% based on the kind of how their averages work out. So just percentage-wise, I've got to give it to the Taylors. They earned it. They appeared in one episode and they are hands down the worst on average.
Yeah, they're real shitty. They suck. Yeah. I'm fine with it.
Eat the rich.
Yes, get rid of them. Perfect. It makes sense. You know, they really do suck.
Yeah.
Let's get into your predictions, Stuart, because last season's wrap up, you made some predictions. So we're going to talk through those. We're going to talk through which were right, which were wrong, and then you're going to make some predictions for season 3.
I completely forgot about this. Let's see how wrong I was.
Okay, so you had predicted David will come back to Schitt's Creek. Very easy prediction to make. Was also correct.
Points on the board.
you did think there would be a location-based episode or like a singular character episode focusing on David in New York. Nah, he came back to Schitt's Creek way too quick for that to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm too used to watching the West Wing and having the singular CJ episode of the season to try and make sure that Alison Janney definitely got Best Actress at the Emmys.
Yeah. You also predicted one of them gets a job. More than one gets a job, so that is correct. You said Alexis gets a job? No. Alexis gets a job? Yes. You thought Moira was going to get more acting work. Not that I recall, I don't think.
Nah.
Johnny does business stuff. Is so extremely vague. I put it as a yellow because I suppose he did.
I feel that that's as vague as Johnny's actual business stuff was. I feel that it being vague is in the mind space of what Johnny was actually achieving. If that's any kind of argument to give me the point.
Sure.
Point, Jess, please.
I'll let you have a half a point for that.
I'll take it.
And then you said, I hope we're over the Stevie and David stuff. We were. In fact, we barely saw Stevie. So we're over that. And you thought Ted is going to find out about the whole thing with Alexis and Mutt, and it's going to be dangle over us for a few episodes. There's like a huge argument. And that really happened. It was kind of just like, bloop. That's it.
Yeah, I'm glad it didn't. I don't. Yeah. As much as I appreciate a bit of drama now and then, I don't actually want to see Ted upset or Anne to have that. Like, he can grieve off screen and it can be over quickly.
We didn't want to see him cry forever. That would have been sad.
No, because that scene with Johnny last season was awkward.
I loved it. But yeah, it was bad. So yeah, those are the predictions you made. So you got like 3.5 points, I'd say.
Out of...
I don't know, 6, 7, however many you made. I don't know. I don't usually make a point system out of this. I usually just say, well, you got these correct and you got these incorrect.
Do I get a gold star? That's all I need to know. Like,
I feel like you get a silver star. Fine, you get a gold one. Fine.
I'm not willing to feign crying on this podcast.
All right. Well, let's make some predictions. For season 3, Stuart, what do you got? What are you predicting is going to happen in season 3?
Okay, let's think about this. So let's go character by character. So Johnny has to do something, right?
Johnny does something.
Let's say Johnny starts a business.
Johnny starts a business. Got it.
Okay. Who else we got? Oh, Moira. Moira. Okay, she's on the town council now. Mm-hmm. I can see her story just being that, really. Like, it's just being shenanigans that kind of comes off of that. Yeah, so I'm going to say that she kind of embeds herself in the town council, tries to deal with issues, that kind of stuff. I don't think we're going to see... I think we maybe have, like, a spanner thrown in the works somewhere, but I don't know where, but... I think it's going to mostly be town council stuff.
Okay. Moira's going to be spending her time on this of the season on town council.
David. It's going to shack up with Jake. I think we're going to see like a dating thing going on there, maybe.
Okay.
What's he going to do with that money, though?
What is
he wanted to save it.
Mm-hmm.
But then is he going to...
Which is another reason I put him in number one. I forgot to mention the fact that he was the one to say we should save this money. I forgot to mention that, but that was a reason.
I wonder if maybe he's going to go into some venture with Johnny. Maybe the two of them are going to do something. Maybe.
Okay.
Start a business. Who knows?
I mean, it would mirror real life. That would be fun.
Mm-hmm. Alexis. Oh, this is tough. Because Alexis, I feel like kind of... We've almost like put a button on her kind of growth journey. So what could she do? Oh Lord, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want her to date Ted? No. Maybe in the future. I feel like they've got a lot of stuff to work through. Dating your boss is also not very good to do. And I don't want to encourage that. But also they are kind of sweet together. Maybe play the field a little bit. Be single for a fair amount of time. Enjoy your own company. But then maybe kind of start dating. But yeah.
Okay.
Move out. Move out.
Alexis is moving out.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any predictions for any like side characters? Bob, Ronnie, anything you just want to make guesses about for them? Ray. Who else is there? Twyla.
Ronnie and Moira, I think, are going to get on better. I don't know kind of what they might do. Maybe they'll set up something in town, some sort of community thing. Anything. Twyla, I can't think of what Twyla would do. I mean, I just hope Twyla is around more. Twyla's a delight.
Any Stevie predictions?
Be present. Is that an allowable thing? What could Stevie do? I don't know. I feel like we haven't really been teed up for anything in this new season.
No.
Like, I don't think anything is kind of obvious. Just be around. I couldn't say that for Stevie. Just around more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stevie's
around. Probably not the boldest or most titillating predictions, but I have no idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are your predictions for next season. We'll see how you make out. I did want to hit on one more thing before we wrap things up. And that's I wanted to talk about our difference in tier rankings between the seasons, because I think it's quite interesting. So in season one, to go all the way back to season one, we didn't have anything in Hot Shit. We had one episode, Little Sister, falling into shit out of luck. The majority of our episodes being in the middle tier, Love That Journey For Me, that tracks. And then a couple, you know, three New David, three in Full Bouquet. I feel like we took a giant leap forward in season two, where three episodes made the Hot Shit tier. And then the other 10 episodes were split between Full Bouquet and Love That Journey For Me. So I just thought it was fascinating. Like, if you're watching on YouTube, you could see the visual of this with our tiers. I mean, this is pretty impressive, I would say.
It is. I mean, to see the actual, like, the data, you know, if you can call it that, to back up what everyone has been telling us, which is that season two is better than season one. I mean, this tracks. Our system works.
It works. Take that, everyone else. We did it.
But I think as well, like, kind of, it makes sense. Typically, people are hotter on the kind of premieres and the finales of any season. So it's understandable that 1 and 13 are in this one. Estate Sale being as high as it is a bit of a shock. Not a shock, but a bit of a surprise looking back on things. I wonder if perhaps maybe we might, with the context of this season, have ranked that a little bit lower. But I love the fact that it's been average or above for all of these episodes. I feel like,
and
that's,
I think
really,
it's only getting better from
season.
Here. Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Are we ever going to get a season that is just nothing in Love That Journey for me and it's just Hot Shit and Full Bouquet? That would be wild.
It's possible. I kind of doubt it. I feel like there always has to be like a just average episode, you know?
Do you think we'll get anything go down into the lower ranks? Do you think we'll get a new David?
It's possible. I'd say it's unlikely. I think it's extremely unlikely for us to have a shit out of luck at this point. It's more likely we'll have a new David. But, I mean, I love season three and beyond. So, I don't know. I don't know that that's... I don't know if it's likely to happen. But, yeah. Let's talk through the little bit of feedback that we did get. We got an email from Erica, and it was just so lovely. So I'm going to read it because this encourages more people to send in feedback because then we read it. And I love reading feedback. So Erica said, "Hi, Jess and Stuart. I'm so glad I found this podcast." And apparently she's a crying laughing listener, which we love. We love crying laughing. So thank you so much. "I cannot believe I was unaware of it before. Sorry I'm late to the game. I loved community building and cannot wait to now follow you both go through this amazing Canadian gem." And Erica is also Canadian, which we also love. We love our Canadians. "As a proud Canadian, I'm always excited to hear my favorite Canadian podcaster, Grace Leader. What a great episode for the season two finale. Can't wait to hear you go through season three soon." So we love that. Thank you so much, Erica.
That's really lovely to hear. Like, we emails like that just make this whole thing, like, not that it's not worthwhile, but like, it makes it just so much more enjoyable. Speaking of the wonderful Grace Leader, we also got some like comments on last week's talking about Grace's kind of honest talk about kind of trans issues being brought up into the show and kind of showing representation and things. And it's been wonderful just to kind of see people resonate with that. And so, yeah, we really appreciate people who watch and the wonderful Grace.
Yes. So thank you so much. If you want to send in feedback, talking shit everywhere, that's where you can find us. podcast.talkingshit.com. And Stuart, are you ready to hear the season three premiere episode title?
I am, because I'm gonna go watch it.
It is opening week.
Opening week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they are doing a business. Maybe they're opening a business. Maybe we're gonna like jump forward a little bit.
Could be.
I don't know.
I know, but I'm not gonna tell you. Well,
you've got Stuart's about like, half an hour to spoil it.
Well, I think that's about it for us this week. But of course, we'll return next week with a season three premiere. As always, you can find us at Talking Shit everywhere. I'm at the Jess Sterling. Stuart is at Stuart Drinks Tea. As Erica mentioned, you can also hear me talking over on Crying Laughing about the upcoming crossover between Abbott Elementary and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, two incredible sitcoms. So go check that out. I'm doing a little mini series with them over there. And yeah, until next time, warmest regards.
And best wishes.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.